Mr. Young, Rail 3. Now, while you were at Bridlington, or just outside, that's when I think the Sherman tanks really arrived. Some people had them at Chippenham right at the end.
I remember the first one that came. I can't remember his name, Bunny Weasley. He was the first one to get a Sherman tank. Whenever I seen it, I said, my God, what's at the height of that compared with what the Crusader are? And that's what I didn't like about it.
Why not? Because you thought it'd be a target, or what?
Aye. There was a lot of things I had against them too. It was just a patch-up job with five Chrysler engines coupled together on a ring. That was all engines. You were going to get rid of the spare parts, and it was all cast. It wasn't hard and steel.
So it was softer than you were used to.
Aye.
And what about the gun? It was a 75mm. You had a Firefly later. Did you get a Firefly right at the start?
No, I didn't get it until the last day, 2 or 3 weeks before.
So you had the 75mm. What did you think of that? I mean, I know you were a driver, but what did you think of it as a gun?
That was an old American naval gun. You want to get rid of the rubbish. Which was, if we didn't have had the same, we wouldn't have had nothing. So we had to make do with what we had. The gun, it was a 3-inch, and then a 3-inch naval gun.
That's what 75mm is, isn't it? Yeah.
25mm then. It was easy enough to drive.
How did you actually drive us? I mean, I know it. Could you tell us how you what the Sherman was like to drive, and where were you sat? And
left hand side. And you had a lever that you could press, and you move your seat up and down so you could sit with your head in the cockpit.
So there's a hatch above you, yeah. And the lever you indicate was just to your right, down below, that you pressed to let it up. And so you looked through that. Did you have a periscope as well?
I had a periscope as well.
So you could either look...
You had another periscope in the hatch. You had two periscopes. And they had a couple of big levers that you pulled. The control differential.
How did that work?
Well, it was just the same as a car. You have a differential. And when you slow down one side, the other one goes faster. So the actual... the brakes were always still... working on oil, because everything was oil. So whenever you pulled it back, the Ferodo used to squeeze all the oil off the brake drum, and used to make you turn to the left or right. It was quite an easy thing, but what I didn't like about it was when you were going down a hill, you thought you were going to double over. So we did a lot of driving through wheat fields and everything. And the wheat fields never cut, they were soaking wet. The heat off the front of the tank was hot with oil in the transmission, and the steam used to come off it. And I didn't like nightmare either. You didn't care whether you were going up or down. And you were going across a ditch.
Did they topple over, or did it just feel like it?
Imagination.
They just felt like they were going to. They had a co-driver in the Sherman, didn't you? What did they do?
Well, nothing really. We weren't allowed ammunition. I had a gun, a real Browning, same as you had in the turret. A Glock gun with a real Browning.
So there was the co-driver had a machine gun, and the turret, the gunner had a machine gun, as well as his big gun. And... what was it? I mean, anything else about how it was to drive? I mean,
to drive that way, it wasn't fast enough. Just to make it a gear and coast. And that was, and the series inning, if you did that, I'm going to turn left at the bottom. But it was, but never did again.
What sort of I believe they were on some big exercises there, Black Cock and Eagle, again on the North Yorkshire Moors. Do you remember anything about them?
I kind of.
Or was it more of the same?
I kind of remember the names of them, but we did a lot of exercises. You know, I've done exercises. He's very real in the ballot.
And once I went up to Scotland, Kirkcudbright.
I went up there because the tank I had was a cleaner tank. Unlimited mileage. See, the other tank was to keep the mileage in. Well, mine was a cleaner tank. And I went up to Kirkcudbright, and I took a gunner with Bert Moyer. Because you had to have a gunner with you to look after the guns. And what was the name of the place? Kirkcudbright.
I'm not sure, they always just say Kirkcudbright Range.
No, but it was the name of a place there, where we were balancing.
Doesn't matter.
Well, it never did know.
And what were you doing there?
Well, I was just looking after a tank. And I used to take it out and go around the course. And
what was the course?
Well, you had different objects, different sides of the road. You practically set the tank in the track, and it went itself because the tracks were that deep.
That so many tanks have gone round it. And what sort of a course was that? I mean, you mean you had targets for the gunners to fire at?
Yeah, the targets for the gunners to fire at. Different things on the right hand side and the left hand side.
So that wouldn't be for Bert to do, that would be have gunners with you.
Yeah, with her there.
You were driving the gunners from other tanks.
Other tank. But when the guard armored did, he came up and I was thrown out of the tank. He took over on him. In fact, he took over the whole lot with the sergeant leader in charge of number. He made his jump. He did jump as fast as what they did. I remember that most of the tank crews were off. They were all one rack. The whole tank crew was our sergeant. Funny way it is.
Whereas yours, you'd have a corporal or sergeant as commander.
A sergeant or enough of them. You had a lance sergeant. We had a corporal, Mahatty.
Corporal?
Mahatty.
Mahatty.
He was in the Sierra. He was a ex-policeman for you.
So he was your tank commander. Your other chap had gone.
No. Jack Truscott was my tank commander.
That's who you...
He's going back to Kirkcudbright. It was only Bert and I. It was still the same crew, Jack Truscott, and Bill Heaton was a wireless operator.
Bill Heaton. Bill Heaton.
Bill Heaton. He was an older boy. He was a wireless operator.
And who was your co-driver?
I can't remember.
So what were these people like? What was Jack Truscott like?
Oh, Jack was good. He said he never needed to tell me what to do. But I was always in a position where I should have been. Never be near trees.
So you anticipated well.
Anticipated, aye.
How did he communicate with you? Tell us about he had the intercom, didn't you? The radio.
Intercom, aye.
What about Bill Heaton, the wireless operator? What was he like?
We all used to go a bit together at night. We were a good crew.
Do you remember anything about Heaton?
Oh, he was an insurance man, a Liverpool, and he got an easy going walk.
What about Bert Moyes?
Bert Moyer, I knew Bert Moyer, he was at school together.
So he was a Scot?
I knew him.
What was he like?
Big, tall boy. He had road shoulders on him. He was a good gunner. As far as I know, we've got three or maybe four credits there. My partner, my tiger.
While he was with you or later?
No, well, it was with me another, yeah.
We'll come on to that, yeah. And so, there's Bert. And what about the co-driver? You don't remember?
I can't remember.
Well,
we were in Ireland, we got a draft to make up numbers from Cartwright Camp. So they had all the armoured corps badges.
Because they got a lot of English drafts that are chipping them as well, didn't they?
Yeah, but we got mainly on that bed with the first lot.
And how did you react to that? Because you were a territorial Scottish regiment. How did you react to the English coming in? Did you mind? Or
there was a lot of banter going on.
What sort of thing?
Well, some of the blokes said they So they were quite a different than the Zebra first that we were volunteers. And later on, when one of the blokes that I met in the draft, it was with the Scottish Daisies. We were in when they were eating them, no feeding them. That was just saying. But I can't remember.
Did that cause any resentment?
Just part.
What about the English Scottish thing? Was the joking about porridge and the rest of it?
Oh, I guess bashing and like that. But I don't remember much.
But you got on well with it, because you
know. The whole troop, the other English boys in it, all got on well together.
Now, which troop were you in with Jack Truscott?
Three
troop, B squadron. And was Truscott the troop leader?
No, he was a troop sergeant.
Sorry, yes. Who was the troop?
And I was a land sergeant.
Who was the commander of the troop? An officer, obviously.
I can't remember.
Was he any good?
See, the bit was, they made me a man of Scotland. I wasn't the troop leader's driver. Because I said, if I have to move to my crew, I'm the winner.
You'd rather not have the promotion?
No. But I was accepting the rule. The troop leader's driver is supposed to be a corporal, and I wouldn't have been a cage, and I wouldn't have been a move. So I said, yeah, I'll get to stay on my own crew or I'm not in the water.
And they let you?
And they let me.
Did it make much of a difference being Lance Corporal?
I've got different duties.
What sort of changes?
Charge of the fire frigate and like that. Cooled potatoes. Well, you didn't cook potatoes, but you were in charge of the fire frigate. You were there at night.
And of the fatigue parties?
And sometimes which I didn't like, you got to drill the squadron, which I was never used to shooting over. I had to do it once.
How was it?
It was a very, very old one. The sergeant major, the nickname of Blinky, because his name was Blinky, and he said, I caught all young, you're going to drill the squad today. So I got to there again. And then, you better think about turn or say goodbye or something like that. I never liked that problem, but although I could do the drill quite easy, it's a case of thinking.
So you were getting your anything else about your time at Bridlington and then just outside it?
Well, that was the reason we moved out to that camp at Cyberlington with for manoeuvre. You were away for a day and then.
The next move was to Warburg Barracks, Aldershot. That was March 44. Getting near. What were those barracks like?
Well, they were practically just the same as the Bowman barracks of before. Yeah. It was the old cavalry barracks. You had big rooms were upstairs, and everything was downstairs where they used to get your horses. What's the name of that barrack?
Warburg.
I don't remember it, but I remember being there. It was for the Roman Bowman barracks.
And the big job there seems to have been waterproofing the Shermans. Do you remember that? Waterproofing the ship.
It was
a big job.
Underneath that, and every well, you could go to your bucket. And the job lying on your back, screwing up big heavy flakes, and they'd ought to be coated around about then, and further screws had to be coated with bucket and then screwed in. And the well that plates on where the 17-pound ammunition was, they weld it about a plate about that long with that, weld it on the side, supposed to give you extra protection.
And what about the engine, the waterproofing the engine, how did you manage that? Did you have the
well,
exhaust?
You had an empty, tight, big square box for the air coming in, and you had another exhaust box going up the back. That was all the waterproofing in there.
Now, you mentioned the 17-pound, that means you were a Firefly by then. Now, were you pleased to be put in a Firefly? Yeah. I mean, it's a Sherman still, but it's just a different one.
You had a better gun. Which was a year ago. A better gun.
And no co-driver?
No co-driver. No, that was where the 17-pound ammunition, by the way. Right there.
Where they put the extra plate. So the crew was Truscott, Sergeant Truscott, Bill Heaton, and Bert Moyer, and you.
And me.
And that was in your Firefly. And your Firefly was called?
Octomachty.
Octomachty. Not an easy one for an Englishman. did you do a waterproof test in it, where you drove into some...
No, not with that. But we did, when we were up in the Burlington, we did a run at the Ruffin race course. We did a run up the river Ruffin. We went down the dip into the water, then went up, turned round about, come back, come up the other side, and round it and across the bridge, and you never saw a thing. You relied on your superman to tell me what to do.
And you were underwater?
Underwater all the time.
Yeah, it was deep enough to put you...
Come up to the turret. The water come up to the turret.
And it didn't leak?
Well, that was enough. These are special tanks. But mine wouldn't leak anyway. But we're always told you'd be going off in about 6 feet of water. And when we got off the land, I said, there's no water at all.
So you weren't taking chances, so you did the waterproofing well?
Yeah, I wrote tied to your hatch. And the crew commander was the one that was going to open for you.
Now, anything else at Aldershot before?
Well, I was mainly marking them in the tank park. The tank park guards and RHQ guards and guards on their own.
Did you know D-Day was coming? You weren't far off. Were you nervous?
No, but I had a feeling I wouldn't come back.
Yourself? So you had one of these?
I didn't really know what to expect, but I had a feeling inside myself I wouldn't come back.
So you had a premonition? I mean, it was obviously wrong, but you had one.
Well, I'd never been in war before, or anything like that. I was a bit apprehensive of it.
Did you do anything about your premonition? Or
no, I didn't.
Now, what do you remember of the actual D-Day itself? I mean, you went over D plus 10, I think, or D plus 11.
D plus 10 or 11, I can't remember.
What about the actual D-Day? Did you see any signs of it?
Well, there's plenty of noise, the guns going off, and the air bursts, and all the rest of it. When I went across the left,
I meant of D-Day, you know, while you were at Aldershot. So, I mean, did you see signs of the airborne stuff or anything?
No, I was sure the plane had gone across.
And then what happened next?
Well, we got orders to move. And we moved in convoy into Southampton. And we went to Gosport, and we were lying on the streets. And a lot of people were... They said, leave one man on your wireless so they'll listen, and the rest of you can come on the street instead. So we slept instead, and they said, so we're ready to go. And one person was on the wireless all the time. And the ship that we left on was an LCT. It had been there. It just come back from Angel. It was a flotilla of years. And he backed out it so that he was driving off. The tanks were all down below, and the soft stuff, the trucks were all down. So we slept on the deck until we got there.
What was the crossing like?
It was quite good.
See much signs of the rest of the ships? I mean, did you come up and have a look?
Convoy, old person, he saw the ships with the balloon at the back of them. Right.
And what happened when you got there? You went to Normandy, to Courcelles, was it?
Courcelles, aye. And that same picture I've seen every time I've been on the telly. That house. And there.
And how did you get ashore?
Oh, just off and on.
Down a ramp?
I was on about two foot one.
So, all that work. Did you, all that work was for nothing?
Yeah. but still had to do it.
Now they moved inland to a place called Cully.
Oh yeah.
Do you remember that move?
No, not really much. But I remember the roads we went on were just grass fields, but they were a mess on the top of it to make it look like a road. And that's the first I remember. And they burnt out tanks, both kinds, Germans, and one or two tigers. So that's all I remember. And this place, we stopped it.
Now, you were there about 10 days.
We're all parked in this field. And the road, what was it? There was a road there. Bocage.
The cash is a local area, yeah.
The main road to some place there. You could see the German running back and forth along there.
Now, what were conditions like? It's just the conditions of service. What did you camouflage your tank?
We were all put into the side of this field and your net off the trees and down to the side of it.
Now, where would you carry the net on the tank?
Just fold it up. Put it on the back.
So not in a locker, but...
No, it's back on the side.
What about, did you have the bivouac arrangement whereby, you know, you did a bivouac from the side of the tank, on the back of the tank? How did that work?
Oh, you just fastened it to the side and stretched it out, and it in, not underneath it.
You didn't dig it out at all?
No.
So you didn't dig, and you didn't sleep under the tank?
I didn't, but later on I didn't.
Why not?
I didn't like it.
I think I know why, but can you explain why not?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the reasons that I didn't like doing all that was Jack Triscuit and Ben Moore were two big blocks. They dug a big deep ditch to below the tank to get them in. And then, Bill Heaton in it, I took the back of your seat to lift out, and I laid it across the transmission. And I could stretch it. It was the left old seating. On the other side, nice to lay it down the back there. I stretched it and I slept in there. And Bill Heaton, he slept in the turret.
And the other two underneath it. So you weren't worried about the tank sinking, because some people didn't sink, you know, they didn't like sleeping under because in case it sank. And
that was the main reason. I didn't like it in there.
Now, what about, what would you carry on the back of that tank? Because apparently there's stored various bits and bobs on the back of the tank.
Yeah, you store up, it's stretched from front to back. Either a shovel, either an axe, either a pick, separate it, of course. Then you had your tarpaulin, and it was strapped on the back of it.
That's what you'd make your tent from, bivouac from.
And sometimes when I was in a night march from one place to another, you'd maybe say about 10 or so many jerry cans strapped across the back.
What were they having them?
Well, a pair of 5 mile each. I did that once when we moved through the night. We put 5 jerry cans or 6 jerry cans on the back and tied them down. And you had to follow the tank in front of the no light. And I had to drive with it my Google from that night. It was murder. The next day I couldn't see.
Was that when you were in France? We'll come on to that. That's British useful. What about, what weapons did you have? Personal weapons? No, I mean, because some of them used to have Stens, they stuck on the back of the tank.
We never had anything like that. We had a Smith & Wesson 38.
Had you had any training in shooting it?
Oh, fire, no, you couldn't have it.
Why not?
You'd be lucky at a van, no, a pistol. If it'd been a real pistol, like a German Wolf or something like that, it'd been better.
It's just too big and heavy and it jerks.
It wasn't heavy at all. When I first went to the fighting force, I got a Colt 45, a big one.
So you couldn't hold it, it was because it was too light.
Oh, well, you could hold it all right, but as far as aiming, I never fired that much anyway.
And what would you wear in a tank when you got to France? Did they have it, they issued a tank suit, by the
way? Yeah, the tank, the overall suit.
What was that like?
It was overall the places for putting pencils and various pockets that you had for everything. And you see, it was too warm to wear a battle jacket. You stood it away sometimes.
So you'd normally just be wearing your tank overall. Now, what about food?
We did well.
What food would you get?
Oh, compo.
Now, what was compo? Because people talk about it.
Well, you got tons of soup, big tins. You had the McConaughey. You had different kinds of stew. You had puddings, cigarettes, chocolate, royal sweeties. We did well. Because I've been a four-man food, we got a five-man ration.
And who would cook it for you?
Me.
You, as driver, you were the cook, or was it just because you would want...
I wanted to do it. I put on the top of the 17-pounder, I mean, isn't it?
Wasn't that a bit dangerous?
Well, that's the only place I could cook inside. And it was from a back petrol stove. We weren't using a regulation petrol stove.
And you were literally on top of the ammunition?
You drew the shells out to the side. It was a case over. I know what's talking about. And I could make a... With all these big flasks that we make like that, one each. And I could fill them up every night with soup. So there a couple of hot soup that stand 2 in the morning at 3 o'clock.
And what would you cook for the lads?
Anything.
Was it fancy, or did you just heat the tins up?
Well, we emptied them out in the Dixie sometimes. And the tea was the worst of it. It was all already mixed up, but they're getting the vendors in there. Powdered milk and tea and sugar all mixed together.
And how would you brew it up?
Well, your main thing was to make it boil and then start the side of the thing with it all boiled in that way.
Did you have the desert method of
No, I never did that.
You know, the can with the petrol and the sand.
I never did that.
So you just did it on the normal stove.
Say what if they get some potatoes that were growing in the field, but you were not supposed to get? This time we were across at the near Tarpeaky Aerodrome, and they had a something like not something like the 88 millimeter.
I'll come to that because that's it. But so you'd get what food you could from the surrounds as well.
There were only two things that I would go with potatoes. And one day we found a farm and it had unsweetened cider in big barrels. And we filled everything up with that. Mother.
You didn't like it, or?
No, unsweetened cider.
And what about cigarette, which you mentioned? Did you smoke?
That's made up for it.
Did you get a rum ration?
No, I don't remember.